Welcome to My Opening Line. I'm Keith and the Girls, Keith Malley.
I'm Chemda.
We talk, of course, to these great artistes out there, and we ask them, what got you into the artisting in the first place?
Yeah, because you're in a good spot now, but we ask them about their first time, their second time on stage, and it's usually a disaster. What we found is like, when it's really good the first time, it's even worse the second time.
Right.
So don't worry, you'll always get the shit story.
And thank goodness they kept going.
Yeah.
Whether you're Gilbert Gottfried or Bonnie McFarlane, what made you go, no, I'm sticking to it? Ladies and gentlemen, this guest has been on Keith and the Girl. The episode, if you want to check, was back in 2017, A True Dream, episode 2589 called In the Tub. Here she is, Siobhan O'Loughlin.
Hello.
Hello. So good to see you.
Great to be with you guys.
This is exciting. We were talking on Keith and the Girl about a show you did that went all over the world. Mm. You broke your hand, long story short, and you needed the help of strangers. And, you know, you talked about the different things, you know, when you don't have all your facilities, that's hard to do. And you went, well, it's hard to take a bath. And you start doing a show in people's houses, including Hemda's house, in a bathtub. People all gathered around. You're a kooky broad. I love it.
It's so funny because the way we got in touch is Keith saw this in a newspaper and he's like, look at this.
Yeah.
She's really, and we're like, no, that can't be real. She's not inviting people to other people's houses to watch her take a bath. And you were nice enough to get in touch to give us free tickets. I mean, what a blast. I ended up doing it in my place because I'm like, no, this cool shit has to happen in my area.
But she doesn't even help you clean the bathtub after. I thought maybe that's the whole gimmick. You know?
Well, it was cute because I at this point don't remember who brought your podcast to my attention, but they were like, I'm not sure if these people are making fun of you or if they think you're kind of dumb.
At first, I didn't know either.
And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to invite them. Like, everyone's, these people, they should come. And then you did. And, you know, so now we're all friends.
It's one of those, like, if you get an invitation to go see someone in a bath tell you stories, who'd say no to that?
That's
in
right.
An undisclosed location that will be revealed the day of because it's someone's house and we don't want you going there beforehand.
That's right.
And now you're putting together a documentary of the whole thing.
That is correct. I shot 6 weeks of touring in 16 different locations, 35 performances. And we've got a lot of drama as well as heartwarming human connection for this film. So it's going to be a 90-minute documentary that we are editing. I just came from the film studio.
Of course you did.
As we speak.
It never ends.
It really never ends.
Yeah.
But it's a delight to kind of go through.
It's very interactive, you and the people in this bathroom.
Yeah, and it's great because we've interviewed
people. She takes a lot of risks. I'll tell you a story. Thank you.
But yeah, to go for it with complete strangers, they could ruin the show, you would think.
It's a lot of risks. She's really actually naked in the tub. There are bubbles, but there, you know, imagine people, especially in New York.
I tried to do it in my house. I got her trick bubbles. She was on the case right away.
But you can imagine everyone's very close to you. You can only have like 6 to 10 guests in a bathroom. You close the door and everything. And you ask people to wash your hair at certain parts. And I know she got, oh, the guy that was with me, that you asked to wash your hair, and he was so awkward about it.
Right.
Is Xerxes
older
who I'm
gentleman,
dating
right?
now?
Wait, what?
Yes. Oh, we'll talk about it after. But anyway,
what?
Shout out to Xerxes.
You got people together and broke up Kenda's marriage.
I didn't.
It's what was meant to be.
Well, thank
there
you for
you
that.
Go.
Yeah. So taking big risks and being very, very vulnerable, and it all came from a vulnerable place of, you know, losing the use of one arm, which is very, very difficult. Anywhere, especially in New York, I think. So, before that, we're going to rewind your life. When was the first time you were on stage?
Yeah, so my preamble to that is I was raised by academic parents. My parents are both poli-sci professors, and they really
poli-sci is when you know many sciences, and nobody, no science is
funny.
Jealous of another.
And they believe in spending time with all the sciences.
Right.
It's political science. But when you play categories with my dad, he can't think of a college course that starts with P, and that's funny. Mm. So they signed us up for things when we were children. So actually, I was three during my first time on stage because I had a ballet recital. And a few things about me, even as a child, I didn't understand, well, forever, and still to this day, I don't understand left from right. So we had to
That's
tie,
a tough one.
We had to tie a ribbon around my right ankle, a red one, so that I would know that that was my right
But not during the show, or did everybody have to have one?
Not during the show. No. What happened during the show is actually a backstage scenario, which is my mom, conscientious woman that she is, brought me my Care Bears coloring books because it was like, you know, 1990.
Right.
And then she realized that no one else brought anything to do for their like baby children while we're backstage for almost the entire recital of all of these girls and all these levels of dance. Mm. So during my first time, this is a really good metaphor. My first time I had to give away all the pages of my coloring book.
Did you react poorly?
I actually reacted well. Mm. I don't know why. I think maybe I was being a showman, showwoman, show person.
So did everyone get one crayon?
Right.
We shared the crayons. But so we had to like do this thing. And my mom, to this day is resentful that no other parent bothered to think of what their three-year-old would do backstage.
I would think that the choreographer, dancer, teacher, you know, the people in charge would have this experience already and be like, hey, for those who might still be close to changing diapers or, you know.
I don't know if Miss Mary was thinking about that.
Miss Mary Mack.
So they're teaching in college, obviously.
Yes, they are.
And so when people, for example, would do something in theater. He knows the theater teachers.
Right. So I'm from a really small town in Maryland. It's called Salisbury. And
like the steak.
Yeah. It's like an English thing, right? But it's less, I think Stonehenge is in Salisbury, England, but there's nothing in Salisbury, Maryland. So it's a small university. So the humanities departments are all actually in the same small building. So my dad was friends with theater professors. And when they needed children, then my little brother and I were often enlisted in things. Shane got really good roles, though. He was in Six Characters in Search of an Author. He got to play the six-year-old who shoots himself.
Your brother?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, you guys know this play? The six-year-old shoots himself. Wow. And he got to do that. So I didn't get to...
Not even in Oliver do they shoot themselves. Wow. This a more depressed kid. Cool, cool. Can I have some more? No. And then he blows his head off.
Does he know the gravity of the scene? Or what, you know, at that age?
He does now, but you know what? He's kind of, he's a dark and sordid Slytherin, so maybe that's helped develop his personality.
Well, or that came first, and he would have been normal.
Was your brother interested in it?
Oh, yeah. He's actually composing music for my documentary.
Ah.
He's a great collaborator of mine. He's an artist in L.A.
Cool.
What makes your dad go, like, and your mom, into political science? Seems very stuffy, for lack of a better word. Knows that and then pushes the arts of all things.
Because they are also activists, actually. And I think that an activist spirit, in general, from what I understand, from my experience anyway, has an additional sense or desire for human connection.
And they know that creativity helps change the world.
They do.
That's what I decided what we do is. We change the world.
Well, you know, at least we present ideas or thoughts or ways of life or ways of thinking or possibilities.
New ways to laugh about it.
Hey, that's a possibility for how to spend your day. Like, do I make a dark joke about this or do I
cry?
You know, cry. Yes.
Is it on the just, train, both.
Is it just the way things are as a kid or is that heavy? You know that your job is going to make the world a better place.
Well, I didn't think that necessarily I was going to make the world a better place, but I was always sort of socially minded. So again, my parents, activist types, very social justice minded. So I participated in this thing called the Day of Silence, if you remember this. Mm. So this was weird when I was in high school, but what I did, and my dad sat up with me while I made all these note cards for me to pass out to students to take a vow of silence on National Coming Out Day in honor of the students who were unable to be themselves. So if we all be silent, then we're presenting solidarity for the students who are not able to come out.
How long ago was this?
This was in 2004. 2003.
Okay.
And yeah, so that was pretty wild. But I got 150 signups by my senior year.
That's great.
Thanks.
Yeah, but what's tough is going.
You finally got teenagers to shut the fuck up.
People, and they were like, "What's gay?" Okay, and they're like, and they're like, "Oh, you're gay." I was like, "That's not the point." But okay, will you? You know, it were. I mean, it was pretty radical then. Now I feel like the conversations must be so different in high school.
What do you think for personas? What? I can't talk. What do you think? Do you go to a lot of political events? Do you go to a lot of rallies?
Sure, I do as best as I can. So you guys know that I've been a touring artist for the past 5 years. But I am canvassing this weekend for Bernie.
Okay.
You know? Oh boy. It's really hard when you're like an empath, you have anxiety, depression, and then at like 1 a.m, you're like, I can't sleep. Let me just look at the polls. What am I doing?
What is it with artists and depression? Why do those seem to go together?
I think they do. Actually, this is a theme in my film. I think that creative folks tend to have some understanding of their own emotionality. And I think that our culture, our society says your emotions are weakness. They are they're a failure and a flaw in your personality. But to be an artist, you have to actually understand some of your emotions so that you can present them in the work that you do and so that you can try to attempt to reach other people. So I think that artists maybe have a better understanding of their depression. I think lots of people are depressed. Lots of people.
Still, though, this is your curse now. What a treat.
I know. But
well, I think part of being an artist is, I think, and this is exactly what you're saying, is just being honest about your depression, whereas other people might not even know that they're depressed and are just walking around in this fog. And because they're hitting status quo, like you're going to your job, you did get married, you had the kid, you have the dog. So how could you be depressed? You're just not tapping in. So I think maybe we're more expressive of our depression, but we don't necessarily have more of it.
Is your brother older or younger?
Younger. I have two, but the artist one is younger.
Okay. Yeah. Any jealousy in the arts between the two of you?
No. I can't speak for him, but I think we're both very supportive of each other. I really want him to get famous in LA, and I can be the Joan to his John Cusack.
Okay.
Well, I like it also. One of you lives in LA, one of you lives in New York.
That's
so you
true.
Always have a place where a hub is.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. At least at the present. I might move. Yeah. I don't know.
Never live in the same state.
Has your brother gone to one of your bathtub shows?
So he actually hasn't been yet, because when I did it in L.A. was because
he was all
moved.
There when they were three. So who gives a shit? He's like, I've been in the bath with you. It's actually not as interesting as selling tickets.
My older brother, the non-artist, has been to the show. And when I lifted my head, you know, to start the performance, his face was utter terror.
Like, what's going to happen? What is
like,
this?
I mean, they can't see it on the podcast, but he was like.
Right.
He did like that. Yeah.
Wait, you're really going to be in the tub?
Right. Like, I know you said you're in the tub, but. Yeah.
Fuck, you're going to make eye contact with me.
He's putting his hands over people's eyes. Like, have a little
and
class.
And his own.
But I pay for this. There's many things you pay for. What do you got to be looking at?
Support the arts.
I'm excited about this documentary.
Thanks. Thank you so much.
Very, very much.
So along the way, until you got to this bathtub show, which seems to be like what you're focused on in your career right now, right?
Yeah, well, I'm sort of capping it. I intend to start new things, hopefully, you know,
right
in the fall. But
that's where you are right now.
Sure is.
Leading up to this, when did you decide, okay, I'm an artist? Like, I did this thing. And now I can quit my job, or this is like a marker where this marks that I'm an artist.
Yeah, so I took piano lessons, which is very funny because I'm a very bad musician. Both of my brothers are great. They're just fast learners. And I have to work really hard to be good at anything, which is why I can't really list like my skills, because I don't know that's something I access easily.
Was there a piano in the house?
There sure was.
Would you play with? When family and friends would come over, would you have to play, want to play?
No. My mom would sort of get annoyed. Like, you know, when everybody's getting ready to leave and one person is sitting at the piano, that would drive my mom crazy. But so I took piano lessons and I was not good at it. Can't count, can't do math, got frustrated. Music theory, what am I doing? But Listen, I will tell you, I love Cats the musical. I was obsessed with it when I was in middle school. It was awesome. So I would go to the public library and get musical theater CDs. And because I loved Cats the musical, which I saw, it happened to be on like public television while I was doing the dishes. And my mom was like, oh no, that? You like that? Mm. So then I got the VHS and my little brother and I watched it all the time.
Wow.
So I got an Andrew Lloyd Webber. I would get Andrew Lloyd Webber CDs. And then I was like, wow, I'm really into Phantom of the Opera. And I got a songbook. So my piano teacher was incredible. And she was like, all right, you want to do this stuff? You want to pretend that you're like the, you know, Phantom of the Opera? He's like 50, I think. But like, let's do that. Be Michael Crawford. So I got to play this like dramatic, flourishing music of the night. That was like.
That's the song.
That was the song. And I really.
How's it go real quick?
Oh, I mean, it's I can't sing
just
it.
Just a little bit, real quick. One second. I want to tell everybody about Quip, Q-U-I-P. It's the toothbrush I use. Hemda uses it. It's electric, but not big and bulky like a regular electric one when you think electric, right?
Yeah, not as expensive either. It was so affordable that I have one at home, and I also have one when I stay at my brother's family's place. It's an electric toothbrush that doesn't take up the amount of room that the regular one does, and it's just... It actually is the size of a regular toothbrush. So here's what I like actually the most in it. Mm-hmm. I know that I'm brushing my teeth for 2 minutes because it indicates it every 30 seconds. So I know to do 30 seconds on the top right, 30 seconds on the top left, bottom right, bottom left, obviously. And then when it's done, it's this sense of satisfaction. Actually, I told my friend Aldo about it, mm-hmm. and he recently texted me. He said, dude, I came in for my 6 month dental cleaning. It took less than 15 minutes on the actual cleaning. That goddamn Quip really works.
That's right. It's great. You're going to love it too. Over 1 million happy, healthy mouths do. Quip starts at just $25.
That's the craziest part.
Yeah. And if you go to getquip.com/MOL for my opening line, /MOL, right now, you can get your first refill pack for free. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/MOL.
Do it.
That was the song. And I really.
How's it go, real quick?
Oh, I mean, it's I can't sing
just
it.
Just a little bit, real quick.
Nighttime darkness.
Oh, the thing of darkness.
Darkness stirs and sharpens, stirs imagination, silently the senses. Abandon their defenses. So I didn't sing it. I just played it. It's like way out of my range. I'm like an alto singer. But
oh, wow. I had you do that for nothing. You didn't even sing it.
I can't. No. I never sang it. It's impossible for me to sing. But I got to be in this recital. Well, I was in recitals anyway because it's like part of like what your parents. It's like part of the thing. You get right. to be in. We were always rehearsing for the recital. It kind of gives you a deadline.
Okay.
And you learn about deadlines through like music lessons because, well, in school and things like that. But a deadline is in front of people with the looming recital, right? I was already out of dance because I was very bad at dance. And my mom was like, you know what? I don't want you to be anorexic. So, and we had to start dancing on our toes. And my mom was like freaked out.
And with the piano, the music tells you where the left and right is. So you don't have to be.
That's correct.
You could wear all the red ribbons you want.
Right.
All
the ribbons. Nobody knows. Right.
And no one knows.
You
can
have arrows. Yeah.
So there was this guy named Josh, and I don't remember his last name, but Josh was like a high school student, and he was really good at piano. Like he played Peanuts, the Peanuts theme.
Okay.
Right? Oh my God, that's so hard to do.
And we all know it. Go ahead.
Yeah. Right, okay. That's like a cool. Yeah. You're like in middle school, there's like a high school dude playing that. You're like, whoa, he's really talented.
It's the hip chopsticks.
So Josh always finished all the recitals. But once I started doing this kind of like dramatic musical theater stuff, I got to be second to last. So I got to, you know, kind of almost close out the night before Josh, right? So that was kind of cool because I felt a little bit of. I don't know. Oh my God. Did it give me confidence, boost my self-esteem, make me feel good about myself? Wow. What a nice thing that art can do for young people, provide them with a little bit of self-awareness and good feelings. So doing that, it was like kind of starting out as a feeling like, oh yeah, I'm going to be like a dramatic concert pianist. And then I was like, no, I'm not. I was in drama club, and then I was like president of drama club, and then it fell apart because our school had zero funding for such things. But I just knew that performing made me feel connected to other people and myself more than I felt during the rest of my time during the day. And I
think a lot of artists feel that way. It obviously gives you a boost. But then there are other times where you either bomb or you miss your line or you do things like that. And suddenly you think you're the worst human on earth. Did anything ever mess up on stage or live, or you forgot a line or something?
Yeah, so it's interesting because I think I mess up in my life multiple times a day, every day. but I somehow had this sense, and I was actually with my drama teacher, one of my old drama teachers, very recently, and she was talking about one of my piano recitals, and she talked about how I totally messed up the music. And I sat there and I stared at the music and my hands were frozen. And I apparently I took my hands in my lap and then I started again. And she said she stood up. She was the only person, but she stood up and gave me an ovation at the end because she was like, you were a 12-year-old professional. Like you just didn't let it, destroy you. And I think it's very interesting because I feel like in all other aspects. I mean, I'm the kind of I was the kind of kid that was so shy that if you said hi to me, I would cry. I didn't like to be called on. I was very embarrassed just to exist and be alive. I struggled to make friends.
How would you try to make friends?
I didn't.
You didn't?
No, my best friend in elementary school was Chauncey Prim, and he was a very outgoing. He was so outgoing that people were freaked out by him. So we were kind of a good combo because we would sit together at lunch, and he would be loud, and I would listen and be entertained, and no one else thought he was entertaining. But I was so grateful that someone wanted to, give me all of that energy. And it sort of changed that changed. But for a very long time, I wasn't. I wasn't an outgoing person, I don't think. I think being creative and learning about music and theater, I think that helped me understand myself.
Was there a lot of pressure from your parents? They're obviously go-getters. There's something about the piano to me especially, and simply by size, it has to take up a room. But I played the trumpet. It didn't take up the room. It wasn't on a pedestal that people walked into. Was there pressure there?
It was an upright piano. It's not a baby grand.
Okay.
So let's just put that. So it can go against a wall. And it was right by the door.
Okay.
So you can leave.
Right. The door to the house. Yeah.
I'm about to play piano. And then did I walk out the front door? Excuse me. Oh, man, I totally meant to do that.
But who was harder on you? You or them?
They were not hard at all, which is maybe part of the problem. My dad was pretty good.
Blame them.
When it was the day before piano lessons and I was like, Dad, I didn't do any of my music theory homework, and he would get so mad at me, but it was only that day and then wouldn't ask me about it afterwards.
Okay.
You heard him.
What's
he gonna do? Repeat himself? Then where are you gonna be?
Yeah, give me a chance to feel bad about myself instead of angry that you keep asking.
And I'm an artist, so I will feel plenty bad about myself.
Yeah.
And then blame you in therapy.
Well, and I started to get involved with college students at the university where they would do little directing classes. They were in directing classes, so they had scenes. And so I would audition for their scenes because I was around and I could play younger people in their scenes. And
Are you a good auditioner?
I mean, no. Mm. No, as an adult in New York, I've literally never gotten anything I've auditioned for, ever.
I was and still probably is the worst auditioner. Probably my first audition was for LaGuardia High School, and I could sing just fine, but I did everything wrong, and I also blacked out because I'm not sure how to do it. So one of the things was the person there would play a note on the piano ding, and you just have to go la, and
yeah,
I didn't even hear it because I was so gone because I was so nervous, and these are more adults, and I'm 12 and they're in high school and they're so confident, and I'm still shy, and I can sing, but I don't know how to do it right now. So they'd go ding, and I'd go, didn't hear it, I'll just sing a note. La! And the look on their face, I'm I don't think I guessed that right. And they did it again, and I'm I'm gonna hear it this. Nope, just lost it, didn't hear it. And I didn't have the confidence to say hey, I'd like how you would put your hands on your lap and start over.
Right.
And I just
Hemda sung around the world too. Did they recognize, like, did they know you from the year before and be like, Hemda, I know you, do it right? Like, did they?
Nobody knows anything. This is me trying out for a high school in New York. So I'm just one of the many people who are trying to get into that school. And I just couldn't. And I wanted to sing a Whitney Houston song, but my next door neighbor who was already in that school was like, they're going to hear 5,000 Whitney Houston songs. You should sing Oliver, Where Is Love? And I'm like, I literally don't know that song. She's like, I'll teach it to you. But
is this from Oliver?
What?
Is this from Oliver, the play?
The Where Is Love?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was from Oliver. But if I don't know the song very well, I now start shaking something. And I'm all quiet. His love and Whitney Houston. I would have sang like it was Whitney Houston, but you take the wrong advice and you get nervous and you're just trying to do the right thing.
By the way, how similar are the songs, right? Where is love?
Oh, Keith, you got the job.
Wow. There's only three songs.
It's just confidence, really.
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, I was just shaking. It was terrible.
But what makes you go back into it? It's obviously a passion of yours.
I just thought, like, I can sing. I just have to, I was taught to be so humble and so, passive that it felt like showing off when they're like, okay, now sing good. And I'm like, well, if I sing good, then I'm just showing off. So I'd get like really nervous and I'm just like, oh, I'm just a regular person, but that's not the time to say things like you're a regular person. They would ask you things like, why should we hire you over other people? And I'm like, I really don't know.
You don't gotta.
Yeah, I can sing. And then if I fit what you're looking for, then probably you should hire me. But like, if you can find someone better, I think you should go with that. Oh, like, I don't know.
Would you ever have a bad, I don't know, whether it's a ballet performance or playing piano and being a kid, you think it's bigger than it is. It devastates you. I'm picturing my 12-year-old, basically stepson. And he was playing basketball. And he couldn't play because his grades were bad, but they didn't tell him that until during the game. Or, you know, if he's playing and, you know, nothing's working out for whatever reason, it's the end of the world that, you know, he's holding back tears. Is that tough for kids to go through? Is that a dumb question? Because everything affected us.
For me, it wasn't my grades or anything. I wasn't allowed to go because I was raised in a Middle Eastern home. And this is what whores do is, you know, express themselves on stage and like be not modest. And so I had these opportunities because I was dancing and I was singing just like even in the little world that I was able to in my school. And so people were like, oh, here's like a professional job, you know, maybe in Atlantic City, which is 2 hours from here. And my mother's like, you're not. I had an opportunity to be like a backup dancer, but I was still 17 in high school. And my mom was like, you're not doing that. And so she wasn't into me whoring out like that. Right. They thought everything was a whore.
My parents had to support me through all of my rejection. I mean, even with like the community players, like I didn't get cast in Little Women. I was in like only ensemble roles in Meet Me in St. Louis. And we did How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, because there was no more drama. There was no drama club really. So I only had a few outlets to be in plays or musicals, and I had very little success.
So did you go, oh, that's me, or it's just I just have to keep putting my time in?
I don't know. I just knew that I really cared about it, and I would go to competitions with like the English speaking union, and I would I was just invested in like literature and drama and things like that. And so I'm just lucky that I had a lot of like emotional support from my parents being like, all right, well, I mean, they blessed them. They were probably just like, okay, whatever. This is like good for her to go to these things and learn from it. They didn't really.
Wow, Keith, what do you suppose that feels like?
It's really nice. But now they really regret that because they're like, we should have told you, no, look, you suck. Time to be an accountant. Time to do that.
Did you ever think maybe I should have been an accountant?
Now? Not an accountant because I can't do math, but I don't know. Right. Something.
Well, out of all the different things that you have done art-wise, what made you settle on the bathroom show? Because tell me if I'm wrong, it seems the most artistic-wise fun you've had.
Sure. Well, it's certainly given me the most traction. I mean, when I graduated from college, I had written my first solo show, which is a play that I wrote about the survivors of Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm. It's just a quick play.
Right.
I just graduated, so I had some time. And I wrote it be like self-reflective.
It was my senior thesis because I'm very activist oriented, so I would spend my spring breaks gutting houses.
What was the gist of the thesis? Like they're bummed out, right?
Well, the thesis project was solo performance as social change.
Okay.
So my piece was an interview-based hour-long play where I performed as the people. Like Anna Deavere Smith was my inspiration. You know? Okay. So I was performing as the people that I interviewed. So I was now trying to hustle this piece. When I moved to New York and I was hustling this piece while I was auditioning and being like, oh, I'm a singer. I can sort of dance and I'll straight plays and I'm going to do all these things. I never, ever, ever, I just never have been cast in like anything that I've auditioned, like truly. But I took my play to Edinburgh, the Edinburgh Fringe. Mm-hmm. So I was 22. I didn't know. It's kind of great. You should do that as your first thing. Then you're like, well, whatever. Right. Everything else is not that bad.
Now, Edinburgh is a festival that they have. It's a month long and people can sort of sell their script. And then did you have a month long?
I ran for 2 weeks and it was brutal.
That's a lot.
It was so
much.
You're
trying to get with this giant festival where like, so many artists are trying to be like, hey, come to my show.
I'm a 4'11 white lady, 22 years old. Like
you are Little Women.
I know. I didn't get cast. But so I'm like trying to like shill my show. And it was like so – it was so – humbling. But I still met some cool people. I mean, I still
– Oh, that's good.
Yeah. I mean, I still – it was still kind of worth it for me to learn about that process. And – then I developed my second show here in New York at the Tribeca Performing Arts Center. I was in this kind of writers performers project that was happening there, and then I really started touring. So that play was called Natural Novice. It's about female body hair. And that play started because the director of that program, his name's Mario. He was like, Siobhan, you write a lot of dramatic stuff. You write a lot of like, you know, heavy dramatic things. And I think maybe
she goes, have you looked outside?
Right. I know. Right. He's like, maybe you should try something lighter, you know, like funny. And then I was like, Mario, I'm not funny. He's like, I think you could be. Like you could be funny. And I was like, I don't know how to do funny. And he was like, well, can you get inspiration from someone else in this group who you think is funny? And this guy, Matt Powers, who now writes for Conan, okay.
Well, you knew where to look.
Hey, right. He wrote this piece about working out and he's very skinny and he's just a tall skinny guy and he would be at the gym and he's wondering why he's not getting like built, but he's like, all these guys are listening to dubstep and I'm listening to like Ira Glass and I think I'm really failing at this. And what I loved actually about his piece, which I think actually inspires sort of my trajectory, is how vulnerable it was because it was about his body and his insecurities about his body. And it was refreshing for me to hear that from such an honest place from this like, you know, 23 or 24-year-old guy. So then I wrote this play about female body hair. And I interviewed all these women from varying situations in their lives and backgrounds. And
curly, straight, redheads. Varying situations.
Varying situations.
Shaved off. Shaved off. Infused.
Yes. Wearing hijab. The multiple trajectories of women in their hair. And so I toured that for the first time. I did a 6-week tour in the summer of 2014. And I had an amazing experience. I was like pretty well received. I was doing fringe circuits and I really enjoyed that. And it was cool. And then I met someone that I was like, oh, maybe I'll be in a relationship with this person. And then I was riding my bike on my way to a debate meeting because there was an election happening here in New York and Howie Hawkins was running for governor and I had my bike accident. And my bike accident sort of turned my life all like just really.
You couldn't tour anymore on this?
It just changed that the trajectory of everything. She could, but I wasn't really, didn't really have a plan for what to do with that project anymore than just like, things just changed drastically after my accident because I have never in my life – I've been so privileged that I've never in my life had a physical problem so great that it kept me from doing daily things.
And let's just run through the accident really quick. You're on your bike and you got what we call doored or – No. I'm forgetting.
No, I was hit by another woman on a bike.
Oh, right. Okay.
In the bike lanes at Grand Army Plaza where these two lanes are side by side going in opposite directions.
And you heard the crack break?
No, I don't remember. Mm. I don't remember. I just remember it was raining and it was very cold and super wet. And you know, you're doing that thing where you lift your head up and down because your helmet, the water's coming onto your face. Mm. And I lifted my head up and I don't remember.
And you're here to say helmets are dangerous. Controversial.
I know, right? Who? It probably saved my life. But yes, so I was bleeding and it was a total, it was a real, it was wild. So I was in a giant arm cast, and then that's when I couldn't type anymore. I couldn't work anymore. So all my grant proposals, all the writing I was supposed to do, I felt like my life was put on hold, and it really messed with my head and sent me through spirals of depression and sort of changed. I think I changed probably as a person, having never been through something like that before, having to be more vulnerable with other people than I'd ever been before.
Needing to ask for help.
Yeah, you can't hook a bra with one hand. Yeah. Maybe some people can. I can't.
I can't either.
I can't.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Great.
Yeah.
But leggings can be pants now, so that's great.
Is there something too, like this you realized was more your voice as opposed to ballet or, you know, I'm comparing something to age three, but compared to any of this other stuff, this is you.
Sure. I'm definitely a text kind of word person more than I am like a dancer. Right. You know, I like dance. I appreciate dance very much. I love my dancer people. I respond to words.
Isn't a keyboard kind of just like a piano? You know what I mean? Take that in.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. What would you say to a young you for you to find your voice early? You know, otherwise, you know, not kind of getting into an accident. Do you wish like you knew, hey, my passion is getting more personal stuff out there. Is there anything you would tell yourself?
I think I teach college classes now. I come in as teaching artist and I talk to students. And one of the things I actually say is like, you know, it isn't about like whether or not you will be abused by people in this industry, whether you will be wronged or treated unjustly, or whether horrible things will happen to you because of the path that you've chosen. It's just how you manage it and what you do after those things happen, which is to not blame yourself, hold yourself accountable, take too much responsibility for things that are not your fault. I'm a very guilty feeling person, and I hold a lot of that. And I held a lot of that when I was young. And well, I mean, you know, like when you're talking about things that go wrong, when I was in one of these college drama like scenes, I was with two college students. It was a play called Painting Churches by Tina Howe. So I played a daughter, a child who was a painter, but she was a disaster. And I actually knew my lines, but the way I memorize lines is really weird. I use like letters. So if the end of the word, if you use the word smoke is your last line, then the E is going to bring me to my next line, E, because everything feels gray. And then I'll be like, well, gray, right? So I have this weird way of there I would memorize dialogue. So, but what it means is that it's actually perfect. So if you don't end your line on smoke, then I don't know what my line is.
Oh, fuck.
So that happened during one of these scenes, during the performance, and she didn't say ahead of smoke. She said something else.
Fire residue.
Or something. Yeah, right. Something like that. And I was like, well, it's not my line. So I was like, painting. It's like, silence, right. Silence, silence. And the guy who's playing my dad, he's got one of those old timey like watches, you know, and he keeps pulling out and he's looking at it. And I, the 16-year-old, was like, something's not right. And I was like,
in other words, she's saying about smoke.
Well, I was like, I'm going to go get some tea. So I take the tray with like the teacups and I carry it backstage and I flip through the script. What the fuck is happening? Flip through the script. And I was like, this bitch said steam. And the line is smoke. It is my line, but she messed up her line. Right. So I
but
came
meanwhile,
out.
She's back there like reading the script and he just keeps looking at his watch.
Are we actually going to be drinking tea?
So again, look, taking responsibility. Here I am. It's all my fault. So then I came out and I said my line and the scene continued. But, you know, it's like,
holy shit. Oh, my God. Did you cry after that performance?
No.
And look at me. I'm so mean. I'm like, so did you cry? Because you needed to cry.
Right. Because Benny's crying every day.
No, you know, I had some, so my friends in high school, they didn't like any of this kind of stuff, but they, like, in their own experiences, but they would come to support me, even though they were like, what the fuck is this? A play at the university with college kids? Right. And so they would come. And so I was really just blessed with so much like support from my crew, you know, my people, that they were like, that was great. And I was like, thanks, you know, and so that I had a place where I could, I think that's important too, is a place where you can sort of talk about these things. Mm-hmm. I think we cry when we feel very alone. And if nobody cares about your experience that you just had, that was so meaningful, you were talking about when you're young. I mean, I don't know. Is it ever not meaningful? It's like, I was going through some of these interviews for this documentary, and this one woman said, and I'm like, I want to try to keep this in. She's like, you know, when I was working really hard as a full-time artist, I just kept feeling like everything I was doing was the most important thing in the world. And I was like, oh, that hurts so much. But there is this place where it does feel so important. And then you're like, no one cares about this as much as I do.
Yeah. I mean, if you were in someone else's world, let's say accountants, and I don't know anything about this, so this is going to be the worst scenario. But like in an accountant world, there's like the, oh, you know, Bob always gets it right. And it's like, but you leave that world. It's like comedians say like, oh, he got Montreal. What does that mean to anybody? But there is a very big festival called Just for Laughs, and people go to Montreal and they get what's called new faces. And if you get that, supposedly you're in front of industry. So they'll throw out like, I didn't get new faces. And if you're around comedians, it's the end of the world and whatever, and you got to like step outside and say, I didn't get new faces. And somebody goes, I don't even know what you're talking about is very good for you. I don't know what you're talking about, meaning like stop being, this is not the end all and nothing ever will be. So as important as your everyday life and your every moment is, and the big scheme of things, nothing matters. The amount of energy that we put into it might not change, especially if it's negative energy. It's not going to change anything for the positive. That's my PSA moment. We can move on now.
And how great is doing a one-person performance when you don't got to wait on somebody's smoke?
So that's what I learned.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. But then the guilt, right? That is definitely my fault when I fuck up. And I have, you know, I had my natural novice. I had a musician, a cellist, who would play on stage with me. And he would do a different kind of score for each character that I played. So they had their own kind of track, you know. Also, I, you know, was sleeping with him, and then that didn't go well. So
what?
I'm so surprised.
Well, at the end of a performance, there's not a gang, and you have to separate yourself. You're already together. Yeah.
But you know, when I would fuck up, then I could just be like, "Hey, line." I would just like turn to him because he has the script right there. Boom.
Right.
You know,
that's great.
Now, Broken Bone Bathtub. It's just there's no cues. There's no, I can do whatever I want. It's so liberating. There's no light board. There's no sound. There's no accompanist. There's nobody is there to be like, well, she done messed up. It's like, nobody. It's,
well, I like it because you found the perfect thing and you can't mess up. Nobody's going to realize it.
No.
And then you decided to add an extra project and put it on film.
I did.
Right.
I did.
So you raised $40,000.
I did, by myself.
By yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I was following along. You got
and you supported me. Thank you.
We did.
Thank you.
That's true. It was Keith and the girl.
I went into Keith's bank account and decided to take credit
for
it.
Thank you, Keith.
Certainly. And it saves me time, too.
You were one of 320 people.
All right.
Congratulations. That's a big deal.
Thank you.
And so what should we be expecting coming up from? What are we expecting?
Yeah, so, you know, the way
now that you figured out life.
I have not figured out life at all. But so the way this doc kind of came out was, you know, there's been a number of like filmmakers who have seen the show and been like, there should be a film about this because it's truly so interesting because you show up to people's houses you've never met. Right. You perform naked in their bathroom for other people you've never met. And you just hope it goes well every time. You're like, well, hope this person doesn't try to kill me.
Here's the hummus.
And there's hummus a lot of the time. It's great. You know, so all of that sort of culminated, and you know, I was kind of working with this one filmmaker who totally dropped the project, and I sort of decided to like put it together myself. So I hired a guy in LA, and then I looped in one of my great artist friends and filmmaker friends here in New York. His name is Edgardo Parada. And he was like, "All right, Siobhan, you're a disaster. I guess I'll take on the production of this because like you don't make films, so you truly don't know what you're doing." And I was like, "Great." Because I don't know how to do this. So I was crowdfunding At the same time that I was touring, also, you know, marketing my own shows, managing my tour, managing this DP's schedule, because suddenly for the first time in 5 years, I have a guy sitting in the car with me who I've hired. So I better raise this money so I can pay him, and whose schedule I'm in charge of every day. I don't even know what I do every day, any day. So now I have to block out 10 days in advance and plan. So I did, but I did it. I did all of it. I slept for 3 hours a night for 30 days. Oof. So
were you crotchety?
No, I was.
I should ask him, right?
Uh-huh. That's a good point. I don't know. I don't think I was crotchety, but I think I was. I was going to say quiet, and I think that's too much of a compliment.
Do you find yourself falling for these coworkers that you work with? Maybe the cellist, this kind of thing?
Okay. The cellist, I did. But no. Actually, okay. This guy was awesome. I put in the contract. I was like, this is a platonic dynamic.
They have to sign it.
Hell yeah.
You may not fall in love with me, private or otherwise.
I don't care if you fall in love with me. Just don't give me that shit. I don't want to hear it.
Right.
Don't want to hear it. I mean, look, some people have working romantic relationships that are beautiful. So, you know, we're happy for you. Ooh. Right, everyone?
Even Cher very happy. Sonny broke up.
Come on.
What's funny that you do now, I think, is that, it's the one person show, basically, but she'll still have auditions to not hire people. And then the new project, of course, is called Cooking on Your Stove. And I'm excited about that.
You get to make me dinner, then give me a bath, and then I go to bed and you drive home. That's...
Ooh, call it What's It Like to Be You.
Right. Where's the best way to follow the doc coming out and
sure.
The shows?
Yeah. So brokenbonebathtub.com. We still have shows coming up in Salt Lake City in Utah. We're going to be in LA for a good amount of time.
If you have a tub, definitely get in touch with her.
Hell yeah, I'll still perform. I'll totally still perform here in New York or elsewhere if you want to. What is it? Fly me to you.
Fuck my life.
Fly me to you. If you fly me to you, I'll perform where you are. But so you were asking what to expect with the documentary. It is about Broken Bone Bathtub, but it is also about. It's actually using Broken Bone Bathtub to explore the journey and the spirit of the independent artist. So anyone who has had to be their own motivating factor by themselves alone to make things happen because there are moments in the performance or in their lives where there's this beautiful human connection that feels so worth it in that time and in that experience, paired with and juxtaposed with all of the times where it is too hard and too lonely, too isolating, painful, difficult, and challenging. I think that is the spirit that I want to champion and that I want to root for. And
so if you're depressed, this is the show for you.
And combating depression while you have to put yourself out there and be your own representative and your own agent, it is about those themes.
I can't wait to see it. You surprise me in so many fun ways with your career.
Oh.
It's such a pleasure to know this kind of art, you know, it's not every day that you get to, first of all, I love going into other people's houses. I want to see how you set it up. I want to see how their life is set up. And then I want to do something quirky, like have some hummus and watch some lady in a tub tell me stories. I mean, come on. Is your life really that interesting? Check this woman out.
There you have it.
And now the closing theme song. What you just heard was my opening line. Please subscribe and tell your friends. Go to myopeningline.com. Mm-hmm.